Wait, no. We don't like that world. Different world, please. Ah, that's better. The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Good morning, everyone out there in the Central Valley. Happy Saturday to you. April 29th, year of our Lord, 2023. This is the Central Valley Sports Report, and I am your host, Paul Metters, live here at First String Sports on Blackstone Avenue in between Sierra and Herndon. This is definitely the place to be. Come down to First String Sports, open every day. Actually, sorry, not on Sundays. Monday through Saturday, 9 through 5, I do my show in the Letterman's Jacket Room. And, you know, if you're able to watch the show on Facebook Live or on the ESPN Twitter account, you could see the awesome setup that we have here. It's incredible looking at Letterman's Jackets from Sierra Pacific down there, friends from Hanford, Liberty, Madera, Sound King Memorial, Buchanan, Clovis West, Fresno Christian, Sierra High. This is definitely the only place you can get your Letterman's Jacket here at First String Sports. So big thanks to them for being big sponsors of 1430 ESPN and my show as well. You can follow me on Twitter at Paul Metters, P-A-U-L-M-E-A-D-O-R-S, or at 1430 ESPN. We want to also thank Lee's Air Plumbing and Heating for sponsoring 1430 ESPN. As you guys know, a little bit of a mini, I don't know, I don't want to call it a heat wave, right? A little bit of a few days of extraordinary heat, so to speak, especially this time of the year. Right now it's 76 degrees and a high of 93. So it came home yesterday from school around 5 o'clock. And it was hot in my house. I'm like, come on, guys. I'm okay with running the air conditioner for a couple of days because we know on Tuesday, well, if you look at the app, it's going to be down to 66 degrees. So the wild, wacky adventures of Central Valley weather here. it's something to behold, that's for sure. All right, so what's on the docket for the next 2 hours? Well, positive vibes only, that's for sure, and pure high school sports talk. A little bit of a Fresno State talk when we bring on Cabe Camarillo coming up after the break. Talking about the draft status of a couple of our Fresno State guys, Jake Hayner and Jalen Moreno Cropper, see where they're going to land today. Fingers crossed. Obviously, it's rounds 4 through 7 today. So we're going to be keeping tabs on that. And hopefully when Gabe comes on the show after the break, Jake Hayner will be drafted. So we're talking with Gabe Camarillo after the break. I know he's been to a few high school games this week. Always great to chat with him. We have Trevor Wilson, Buller Baseball. You guys know how good of a season the Knights are having, the number one team in according to Max Preps, ranked in the state. They are 19-3. They're coming off a sweep of Madera High yesterday, a rare doubleheader played at 1 o'clock and 3:30. Trevor Wilson's incredible baseball player, ahead of the UC Irvine, top of the lineup guy, patrols center field like a monster. Hit a home run yesterday to lead off the game. 1-0 game in game one. Great game pitch by Sam Reynolds. Was only gave up one hit and no walks. So he's one flub away, and it was a bloop hit from a perfect game. But yeah, Trevor Wilson impacted that game. Was able to steal third and came on the sac fly for the only run. But yeah, Trev's a great, great baseball player. Enjoyed watching him the last couple of years. He's coming up at 10:30 at the top of hour number two. Going South Valley. Rossi High Athletic Director Ken Sawatsky, he's retiring after 35 years in the district. I've known Ken for a long, long time. He's a South Valley guy, Dinuba, Reedley area. Ken's done an amazing job at Rossi, and you know, I wanted to honor him and the work that he's done down there at Rossi High and in that area. He's made a huge impact. It's one of those one school communities that we love to talk about, and they've had some facility upgrades. Ken he's poured his heart and soul into that community. So I'm going to talk to him and, you know, talk about some of those schools down there and what the landscape looks like. So looking forward to that. That's at the top of hour number two. At the bottom of hour number two, around 11:30 or so, Clovis West swim coach Adam Reed. He's a director of the Central Section Masters Meet that's happening next Saturday. This guy's going to be super busy. He's always super busy, but this is the super busy, busy, busy time of the year for Adam. From May 11th through the 13th, that's the state swim meet happening here at Clovis West. And they have done an incredible job with improvements to the pool for the spectators. They've poured a lot of money into the upgrades at the pool. So looking forward to talking to Adam. And if you guys know, The last name, Reed, well, his brother, Duncan, played tight end for Fresno State, graduated in 2005. So I'm sure we'll talk about those times and rooting for the Fresno State Bulldogs. A couple, I know we've moved on from basketball, but a lot of the awards throughout the state are coming out, and our friends at Cal High Sports honor some of our student athletes. Just want to mention them really quick. So Division II Player of the Year is Mike Davis Jr. at San Joaquin Memorial. We know what they did, winning D2 state playoffs, incredible run that they had, and Mike Davis Jr. played remarkable basketball towards the end of the year and stood out immensely. And so he was named the Cal High D2 Player of the Year. Congrats to Mike Davis Jr., San Joaquin Memorial. Talia Maxwell from Central, we know the incredible game that she had in the championship game when they won their state title, their D2 state title. 24 points, 24 rebounds, remarkable. She was named as one of their D2 all first teams. And Mo Trigueiro for Carruthers, incredible career, school's all-time leading scorer. She was named Division III first team. So congrats to those guys for their honors. Softball. Last week, we had Ryan Maddox on the show and Kara Sipe, two stud softball players. They had a couple tough ones. They had to win the game in the bottom of the seventh, or I think it was the eighth last night to beat Clovis West 2-1. But they moved up to number one in the state, remained undefeated. They are 21-0-1. They have that tie on their record. So Clovis North softball, number one team in the state by Cal High Sports and by SB Live. They are on a mission this year, so congrats to them. I want to go over a few baseball scores here, and I do have the standings up here on Max Preps. I might be able to get to those. So I mentioned the doubleheader sweep from Bullard, the 1-0 game to start the doubleheader, and then they won 9-3 in game number two. They're atop the CMAC standings. They are by far and away the best team in the CMAC this season. If they went out, they're playing Edison and Sanger to finish out the year. If they went out, they're going to be the clear-cut number one team in the Central section. All right, another CMAC score. Sanger defeated San Joaquin Memorial 8-6. San Joaquin Memorial, who would have thunk this? 2-8 in CMAC play this year. Sanger comes away with the two-run win at home. Madera South beat McLean 6-1. Coach Sandoval does an incredible job. And I love mentioning Madera South baseball. Why? Well, because what Murph Gray is doing for Fresno State. Murph Mania is sweeping the Central Valley. He's had an incredible season. What is it, 5 straight Mountain West Freshman of the Year? I mean, it's like, who else is going to win it? I mean, he might win out. Talk about Bullard winning out. I think Murph Gray has a good chance of winning this award every week. He's just having an incredible season, hitting bombs pretty much every game. So Madera South beats McLean 6-1. We did mention the Bullard beating Madera 9-3. Ridgeview beat Independence 12-10. Kerman defeated Central Valley Christian 9-1. I want to mention too that ESPN 1430 ESPN is going to be carrying the baseball game tomorrow at 11 o'clock, or sorry, next week at 11 o'clock. Kerman and Central Valley Christian and Fowler next week. Liberty defeated Centennial 4-2. Liberty and Madera defeated Yosemite 15-1. Dos Palos, really good program there, defeated Kalinga 12-1. Carruthers beat Parlier 7-6. Tulare Western, they could be a force in Division I. We're going to be talking with Gabe Camarillo about how Division I might shape up. Hey, there's only 2 more weeks of baseball, and then the playoffs are going to hit. But Tulare Western's got – they have an ace. They have a dude that's going to UCLA. So whenever you have a dude like that, they're going to be tough in the playoffs. Rigetti defeated Dos Palos 10-0. St. Joseph defeated Aurora Grande 3-0. And Buchanan beat Clovis West 8-2. Gabe and I will talk about this game a little bit, but on Wednesday, I saw something that I have rarely seen in high school basketball or high school baseball. I don't know if I've seen something like this. So let me set it up. Buchanan was winning 7-3 going into the top of the seventh. Colton O'Toole was pitching a very, very good baseball game. They put him out there to finish out the game. Got the first two outs. No problem. All right, so check it out. This is what happened in the top of the seventh inning. Clovis West gets on by an error. So error, then a hit by pitch, walk. Bring in a reliever, walk. Another reliever, walk. Then a two-out RBI single, and then another RBI single. Clovis West comes back to win on scoring 6 runs on only 3 hits in the top of the seventh inning for a wild 9-7 win. But Buchanan comes back and defeats Clovis West 8-2. Clovis West and Clovis right now are tied top of the track standings at 9-3 with three more games left. Clovis, in a highly contested game, beat Clovis East 2-1. I read where Clovis East had the bases loaded in the last inning. Clovis was able to get out of it, so big win for them. Coming up after a loss on Wednesday where Clovis East beat Clovis 9-4. Clovis North, they won three in a row. They swept Central, beat them 9-2. A couple more scores of note. Lemoore defeated Dinuba 10-3. Reilly defeated Sierra Pacific 7-4. And Emmanuel defeated Hanford West 8-1. One more score of note. Garces beat Bakersfield Christian 1-0. Bakersfield Christian has a really good team. Got some stud Division I pitchers. So there's a little wrap-up. I mentioned standings. I mentioned in the track, Clovis and Buchanan are tied at the top, 9-3. Clovis West is 7-5. And Clovis East, 6-6. Clovis North, after sweeping Central, is now 3-9. And Central is 2-10. And we mentioned that Bullard is 10-0 in track. Madera is 7-3. Edison, 5-5. Sanger, 5-6. Sandwich Memorial, 2-8. Justin Garza, 1-8. I want to mention, too, Fresno High, a friend of the show, Jason Pappy, doing a great job. They are atop the standings, North Yosemite baseball standings at 10-0. Madera South is 9-1. Hoover, 6-3. Sunnyside, 5-4. Torres, 4-5. Sanger West, 4-6. McLean, 0-10. And Roosevelt is there at 0-9. All right, we're going to be talking more about high school baseball. I heard something just happened. I don't want to spoil it, but Jake Haner just got drafted. And we'll talk about that with Gabe Camarillo coming up after the break. A lot of exciting talk. Congratulations to Jake. Take a little break and bring back Gabe and talk about high school baseball and much, much more on the Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN. Welcome back.
The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Central Valley Sports Report. I'm your host, Paul Mitters, here at First String Sports. Bringing on Gabe Camarillo right now. Gabe, home field advantage, Monday through Thursday, 3-5. All right. I teased it before the break, Gabe. I know you've been following this closely. You do a lot of work covering Fresno State football. So, I'm going to give you the honors, my friend. I'm going to let you break it here on 1430 ESPN on our station. So, Jake Haner got drafted. So, tell us about it. Where'd he go? Who'd he go to? What's up?
All right. So, Jake Haner obviously had a couple teams he wanted to go to. And, you know, maybe the Raiders were one of them because that's an opportunity for him to start when Jimmy Garoppolo eventually falls away. I know Jimmy G is not the long-term solution for Vegas, so that's an idea. Maybe Denver for Jake Haner, because Russell Wilson maybe is not the long-term solution there. But instead, he's going to back up a guy from his former college, that Derek Carr for the Saints. His new backup is Jake Haner. Jake Haner drafted to the New Orleans Saints. And why is this unique? Well, Jake Haner's gone on the record as to say that Drew Brees was one of his favorite quarterbacks growing up. In fact, maybe his favorite quarterback. The reason why he wore number 9. I think this is really cool for Jake Haner to have this opportunity to play for New Orleans and back up Derek Carr. I'm sure that I don't know if it's in the GM's mind if his backup and his starter played at the same college, but it doesn't hurt, right? That's something for them to talk about. I've seen them, you know what I might do actually after this is over? I might, when I get off the air here, look for that video of Jake and Derek talking, because the two of them connected earlier this season. I think it was October 15th when Derek visited Bulldog Stadium for Devontae's retirement ceremony. I think the two of them were seen talking. Maybe they were planning out their joining of each other on NFL teams. I don't know, but that was a really cool really cool news update. I'm still kind of processing it, as you can hear. I'm just really excited for this guy because we've seen what he's done here at Fresno State. He is someone that went through hell. I mean, he had to go through a grueling rehab process just to get back on the football field and help Fresno State get back to the Mountain West Championship and win the Mountain West Championship. You think about all the things he's been through in his career here. He comes in as a transfer, disgruntled because he was unseated at Washington. And then he goes through fire. His first ever Bulldogs start, he throws three interceptions and loses to Hawaii in front of zero fans. But he gets better, and he explodes against Utah State, and him and Jalen Cropper connect for 200 yards at Utah State. And that was the first time in 2020 that we saw a glimmer of hope that maybe this could be something special. And we saw a larger glimmer, heck, a blaring, blinding light at UCLA of the star potential of these two gentlemen when Jake Haener found Cropper in the end zone of the Rose Bowl to beat number 13 UCLA. And then obviously the hype train was there. Everyone was happy for Haener. We had Jake Haener week in City of Fresno. They almost blow it by losing to Hawaii. They still have a chance. They beat San Diego State on the road. They lose to Boise State here. The ups and downs of this journey. I mean, Jake Haener has had some of the best seasons in Fresno State football history. He almost wasn't a Bulldog anymore. He entered the transfer portal. He was going to go to Washington. Tedford comes in to save the day, and the rest is history. And when you think about the start of this journey, a kid from Danville, a kid who wore number 9 because of Drew Brees, and now he's going to play for Drew Brees' former team. What gets better than that? Football is great. I just got to say that. Football is great. When you tell the whole story back again, it really puts in a perspective of how cool a journey Jake Haener's had, and the journey's not over yet.
No, you're absolutely right. And, you know, I mean, we've talked a lot, Gabe, over the last couple of years, is what is Jake Haener's legacy going to be? And, you know, I think he's beloved. He went from public enemy number one when he transferred. There was just a lot of hate out there, and came out with the apology video, something that he didn't have to do, but he did because he knows – how much Fresno State loves its Bulldogs. And he knew that, you know, he wanted to go down as one of the best in Fresno State history, and he does. And for him to get drafted by the New Orleans Saints after the crazy ride that Derek has been through over the last couple of years as well, for Derek to you know, now play for the Saints and for Jake to be drafted, I mean, that's just – I'm still processing it too.
Yeah, you know, I'm sorry I sounded frazzled there. I'm frazzled because I like the kid. I really do. And when you see someone that you've been around and that you've watched for 3 years – at Fresno State, and he's going to go play in the NFL. I didn't experience this with Derek. I was way too young to experience this with Derek. I wasn't covering the team then. And he's the first Bulldog quarterback since Derek Carr to get drafted to the NFL. And he's going to play with Derek Carr? Seriously? They're going to play together with the same team? I think the entire city of Fresno just became Saints fans over the last couple minutes.
No, you're right. So fourth round, 127th pick overall, Jake Haener to the New Orleans Saints. Yeah, right, like unless you have the NFL ticket, we're gonna get every football game. I think the Fresno affiliates are gonna have to pipe in and have every Saints game this next year because it's gonna be wild to see those guys reunite. I can't wait, you know, to see Derek and Jake, you know, connect for the first time, right? To see the big hug that they're gonna embrace each other with. I think that's just gonna be a lot of fun. So again, congrats to Jake. Teaming up with Derek Carr, this is a lot of fun. And man, this to me, honestly, this was a total surprise. I had no real idea where he was going to go in the draft, but to see him go to the Saints is certainly a lot of fun to watch. So anyway, Jake, congratulations. Now we're just waiting on Jalen Moreno Cropper. I see that Andrew Martin sent out a tweet. He's hanging out at the house. Looks like the family is there with the watch party. What are you hearing about Jalen? What do you think about him? Obviously, his skill set is very attractive for NFL teams. He could return kicks, and you know, we know what he could do on the offensive side of the ball lining up as a wide receiver.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how an NFL team utilizes Cropper because he could be a slot guy. He could also be a kick and punt returner, and I think because of that versatility, I would expect to see Cropper's name called today. Now, when it's called, I'm not sure. I was having a conversation with a colleague a couple of days ago comparing him to Keyshawn Johnson, who was the last Bulldog receiver to get drafted. Now, Keyshawn was drafted in 2019 in the sixth round, 174 overall. And I think Cropper should get drafted higher than Keyshawn. And I know it's because different things can happen. You know, maybe there is a deeper wide receiver pool this year than in 2019. But I think Cropper was more explosive as a Bulldog. Cropper definitely had more highlight plays, I would say. And I know Keyshawn won a Mountain West championship, but so did Jalen. And you think about what Jalen represents too from off the football field type stuff. He is a community guy. He's always been a stand-up citizen. He's always been giving back to Sanger, giving back to where he came from. So I'm not going to say that's going to be ignored by NFL teams. I think NFL teams take that into consideration. They look at his speed. They look at what he can present. One concern that teams have had about him is that his lack of size and strength. But at the NFL Pro Day at Fresno State, he took 13 reps of bench press. That's 225 pounds. That's in line with the receivers of his physical size. There's a guy from Stanford, Michael Wilson. He's 6'2", 213. He had 23 bench press reps. But when we're talking about Jalen Cropper, who weighs less than 200 pounds, guys at that type of weight class typically only lift about 16 to 13 times. Jalen lifted 13 times. So you're looking at receivers in the NFL. They're skinnier and skinnier as we get further and further into this new era of call of NFL football, right? Devontae Smith, he's skinny. You think about Marquise Hollywood Brown. You don't need to be a Devontae Adams type of physical receiver to play in the NFL anymore. You can be fast, you can be thin, and that's good enough. So I think the recent emergence of guys like Devontae Smith and et cetera, that's going to help Jalen's case in getting drafted today.
All right, so we're waiting to hear Jalen Cropper, Jalen Moreno Cropper's name. Good luck to him. We love these. We love our local guys for sure, Sanger, Buchanan, Fresno State. So, Jalen, good luck. And, I think his name is going to be called. And I need to mention, too, here that Adrian Martinez, he was ranked the 10th quarterback, you know, for him from Clovis West and then Kansas State, well, Nebraska and then Kansas State. So Adrian expects to sign, an unrestricted free agent deal after the draft. And then Chris Voorhees, we know that story. We saw the video of him tearing his ACL at doing some bench press, Kingsburg High, USC, offensive lineman. We hope his name gets called, so we'll see on that. Gabe, I want to ask you, too. We've only got a couple minutes here. Trevor Wilson's in the house from Bullard. He's here at First String Sports. Looking forward to talk to him after the break. Hey, we saw some good baseball this week. I know you were at the Clovis East Clovis game as well. I talked about the Madera game at Bullard. But what did you see at Clovis East and Clovis?
Good baseball. I mean, Clovis East was hitting the ball hard and often. And, you know, that was a pitcher on the mound for Clovis that had a .97 ERA, gave up 500 runs in the first inning because Clovis East was just making good contact and loud contact. I can't wait to update these Max Preps rankings because, Paul, we got 1 week left in track. We got 2 weeks left in CMAC. It's time to start talking about playoffs. And he mentioned Bullard. Bullard is in pole position to be the number one seed for the Division I playoffs. And they've earned this role. They've beaten some good teams to get here. They beat a really good Redwood team that threw their number two arm, Reese Bueno. They were able to get past him, get past the Rangers with that the five-run sixth inning rally. So looking at Bullard's resume, they should be the number one seed. But looking at the track, it's anyone's game. Right now, Buchanan and Clovis are tied at the top of the track. You look at who those two teams have remaining. Buchanan likes their chances against Clovis North. Buchanan's playing really well. They beat Clovis West yesterday, I think 8-2, 8-3 to win that series. Buchanan has Clovis North that's coming off of a sweep over Central, so the Broncos have some momentum. And I'm really impressed with how Buchanan responded to that loss on Wednesday. You know, when you're able to bounce back with a win after losing a four-run lead with two outs and two strikes and you're a strike away from winning, that can really mess with your head. But I know that Coach Fonts and the coaching staff there had a good practice on Thursday, and they told the guys, it's baseball. It happens. It's about how you respond. Baseball, which I love more than any other sport, this part I like more than any other sport, it's the fact that you can fix your mistakes. You have several chances to respond back. And I think about Trevor Wilson yesterday, right? Wilson's going to listen to this. He hit a no doubt first pitch home run the first inning. But then the next at bat, he gets on base and he gets thrown out on the base pass. He could have pouted. He could have said, you know what? That's the end of my day. I'm just going to half-ass it everywhere else. No, he was able to get an RBI single later in the game and help his team pull away from a very good Madera team. That's what I love about baseball. Buchanan did that in a larger sense by bouncing back yesterday. So Buchanan and Clovis, they're in the midst of a heated track battle. Clovis won yesterday by leaving the bases loaded in the top of the seventh inning. Clovis East is just as good, I think, as the top two teams. The track is going to be a handful to see this week. Clovis East versus Central, Buchanan versus Clovis North, Clovis versus Clovis West. I'm thinking, if Buchanan's able to win these three games, I can see Clovis West taking one from Clovis. I'm going to be honest. I think Clovis West is playing well. They were able to come back against Buchanan last Wednesday. I can see Clovis West taking one because Clovis is going to be without their head coach, going to be without JD Sales for the first two games of this series. So it's anyone's ball game, but Buchanan, I think, has the better week ahead of them because they got Clovis North, a team that they've had success against. But, Paul, I know you're going to tell me this right now. Anyone can beat anyone in the track. I'm fully aware of that. I think, though, Buchanan definitely has the edge because of the remaining schedule, and Clovis West is going to be close and fun.
I agree. Good stuff, my friend. And, yeah, we do want to mention that J.D. Sale is going to miss the next two games. He was kicked out of a game last week, had to serve a three-game suspension. But, yeah, I mean, you know, Clovis seems to be clicking as well, and Buchanan. You know, those are the top two teams to track. But anybody can beat anybody, as we saw Wednesday night with Clovis West and Buchanan. So, Gabe, good stuff as always, my friend. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, I'm going to try and calm down from this Jake Haner news. Oof.
All right, Jeez. Do some more research, and maybe towards the end of the show, you and I can jump back on, and we can talk about that. All right, thanks, Gabe.
Absolutely, Paul.
All right, coming up after the break, we do have Trevor Wilson, speaking of Bullard and all of the Bullard greats. He's a good one. He'll be talking with us here on 1430 ESPN.
The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Welcome back. It's at the Valley Sports Report. I'm your host, Paul Mitters, here at First String Sports. Thanks to First String Sports for hosting the show. They do a great job. Come on down Blackstone Avenue in between Sierra and Herndon. Well, talk a lot about Bullard baseball this year and, you know, in the past. And, you know, I didn't have time in my opener, but I have in front of me the Bullard Baseball 2023 Hall of Fame brochure. It's just chock full of information. Jimmy Sandrini does an incredible job. You talk about how beautiful that field is. Well, it's because it's Jimmy. And he's a big part of Bullard baseball. And they've had 23 – well, they missed a couple because of COVID. So starting in 2000, they started a Hall of Fame. And, looking at the program here, one of these days I'll get to it and let you guys know all the cool information, the history of Bullard baseball, seven section championship teams, two number one national teams, two number one state. So, I mean, do you think Bullard, do you think baseball – and I got a good one right next to me. Trevor Wilson's played center field, signed with UC Irvine. So, he came in here to First String Sports, was walking around, hanging around, had a nice polo, looking pretty sharp here. And it's UC Irvine polo. Well, because the Bullard one was – couldn't find it really quick. So, he had to throw that UC Irvine. So, that you made a good choice here. Good choice with your polo, but good choice with your school. Knights are 19-3 overall, 10-0 in CMAC, clear path to number one seed. So, Trev, thanks for coming in. What's
of course,
like,
thank you.
Yeah, you bet. Like, Saturdays, what are Saturdays like? I mean, you had a doubleheader yesterday.
Yeah,
recovering a little bit. So the games, you know, you don't have a night game, so you're not getting home at like 10 o'clock or whatever.
Yeah.
So what are like Saturdays usually for you after a ball game?
So we usually play Tuesday, Friday in league. So yesterday was a lot because it was really hot. So those two games, I'm really sore right now, but. Saturdays usually wake up, try to get a lift in early. I don't like to wait because Saturday nights I usually hang out with my boys. But, I usually get lifts in and then I'll hit, work on stuff that I need to clean up. Even after good games, still got to work on stuff, keep the process. And then that's pretty much it for Saturdays. Sundays, recover, back to it Monday.
How about breakfast on Saturdays? You cereal guy, you eggs guy, or – what do you?
I'd say I'm a waffle eggs guy.
Yeah.
I'm that's my combo. I've been rocking with that since about first grade.
Okay.
So I've just been eating that about every single morning. Waffles, eggs, that's my thing.
Not the Eggos where you put in the toaster like real waffles where you're pouring the
for
batter
sure,
and stuff?
For sure the Eggos. That's what I'm rocking with every day. All right. Pop two of those out, pop two eggs out, get some orange juice, and I'm ready to roll.
Syrup. Syrup guy or?
Syrup and peanut butter.
And peanut butter.
That's how I roll.
All right.
Need cash? If you've got a car.
There we go. All right. Hey, free advertising for needing a car. All right. So I want to talk about yesterday's game. So you mentioned it was hot, right? We mentioned it's going to be 93 degrees. It was pretty hot. Doubleheader, pretty rare, starting out on 1 o'clock. And that first game went super quick. I think it was like an hour and 20 minutes. Sam Reynolds pitched a gem. But you impacted both games, as I mentioned in my opener. You stole third, was able to score in a sacrifice fly for the only run in the game. And then, you know, you lead off the game number two with a home run. Going into that week, though, or going into this week, Madero is the closest to you guys in the standings. You guys have some extra juice coming in that week?
For sure. You know, our coach, Tom Donald, he does, like, an extremely good job preparing us for that. Like, we knew going into that week that that was pretty much championship week. Obviously, we still have to perform the rest of the games, but we knew Madero was our best competition in the CMAC. And credit to them, they're a really good team. They got two good lefties who threw good games against us. So hats off to them for that. We knew what we had to do. We knew that we're a really good team, so we just had to come in prepared and not let up on them at all.
I want to talk about that stolen base. I was able to watch the second game. I missed that first game. So was it off of a lefty?
Yeah,
it was.
So I got to second on – I hit a ground ball to third, and then he threw it away, so I got to second. And I think – I don't know what our two-hitter did. I forgot. But Cam Schneider was up to bat, and when he's up, people like to throw off-speed a lot. So I got to see the pitcher's grip, and I knew he was going off-speed. So I had a feeling he was probably going to spike it. Either way, if he's throwing off-speed and I get a good jump, I know I'm going to be safe in that situation. So glad I got to get to third, and Cam came through and got the sack fly, and Sammy pitched an incredible game. He's been doing it all year. He just gets in there and competes, hits corners, throws his off-speed early. He's been doing great.
Talking with Trevor Wilson, Bullard High center fielder. All right, Trev, let's go next level here. So you're reading grip. So lefty's on the mound. You're seeing that he's got a curveball grip. Is that something that you know coaches have taught you over the years? Something you picked up? Are those things like natural for you?
Yeah, well, base stealing is kind of like a really big part of my game, so I try to take as much pride in that as I can. I got some really good coaches. Bobby Chambis, he's taught me a lot of stuff about base running this year. Just picking up on the littlest things you can to get that extra base and that extra 90 just help you win games. That's what I'm trying to do is produce runs.
And you produce a run in the second game, leading off, pulling a Ricky Henderson there, instant offense. You know who Ricky Henderson is,
right? One of my favorite players.
Well, there you go. Okay, we'll get to that later. Awesome. I like you even more now. So, all right. So you're leading off the bottom of inning number one in game number two. Are you thinking, man, if this guy throws me a cookie, I'm just going to grip it, or what's your mentality to lead off that game?
Yeah, so, I mean, I usually get a lot of first-pitch fastballs. Like, last year I probably had, like, 15 first-pitch hits because people would just lay fastballs in there, but they know me now, so I've been getting a lot of balls or off-speed early. But going into that bat, I was just saying if I get a fastball over the plate, I'm going to hammer it, and I got one, luckily. And I got a good piece on it, so I'm glad that happened.
So how many? You got four in the year or five?
I got five now.
You got five. Okay. I'm just saying this. I'm throwing it out there. So I've seen about five Bullard baseball games, and I've seen three of your homers. So I don't know. You know what I mean? Maybe give you a little extra juice. Well, I did see that you had that inside the Parker, too.
Against Memo, yeah.
Yeah, right? Yeah, the inside Parker got by the right fielder. He dived, and, man, sprinted across the base paths there. So, all right. So, you know, what I like about this Bullard team is that guys know their roles, right? You're a leadoff guy, your center fielder. You know, I've talked to your pitchers, and they're like, hey, if the ball's anywhere out there in center field, right center, left center, you know, the Trev is going to be able to track that down. So talk about your teammates and knowing their roles. And, you know, if this guy's up, you need to sack fly in this spot, man, I'm going to give up my bat or roll over or things like that. Talk about the different roles and how your guys are coming through.
Yeah. So our team, we all know our roles right now, which is really good. We started out the year 2 and 3. So after that, you know, we really were just focused on what we could do to get better. We all knew we knew what we were capable of, but, dudes really are just starting to come together now. I think there's no other team in the Valley with a better connection than us. I mean, we've grown up playing with each other, but a guy I could talk about knowing his role is Keenan Gomez. I'm his best friend, so I could say this, but people last year, I could say, doubted him a little bit, and boy, did he turn that around. He came out this year absolutely hot. He's hitting .400. On base, he's on base half the time. He's like .520 on base. Like, dude just absolutely he's getting after it right now. Schneider, I mean, whenever he's on the mound, I think we're going to win the game. That's just how I feel. He just goes out there and he's ultimate competitor. Jackson Murphy, talk about outfield and, you know, being able to, for me, everyone's saying I could go get stuff, but Jackson could absolutely go get stuff. Same with Nick Stubblefield. Those two dudes, I wouldn't want to share the outfield with anyone else.
And Stubby's playing right and Murphy's playing left.
Yeah, and Murph had a little bomb off the scoreboard yesterday, fired me up. Dude's just been delivering, simple as that. He knows his role, and he's just going after it. Luke Beal, another guy that a lot of people don't know about maybe. He's not committed to go anywhere for college, but I've grown up playing with him too, and he's just come out, and he's just delivering too. Dude's just getting hits left and right whenever we need it. He's fired up, got a lot of passion. Same with Jake Porter. Dude brings fire. Like, those guys are just straight passion, and I love it. And I wouldn't trade them for any other teammates in the Valley.
And, you mentioned, you know, Sam Reynolds, you know, threw that gem yesterday, and Cam Schneider. I want to ask you, too, what's your walk-up song? What'd
my
walk
up song is "Just Wanna Rock" by Lil Uzi Vert. It's a song that kind of blew up recently. It gets everyone a little fired up. That's what they've been telling me. I was thinking about changing it, but I think I'm gonna stick with it now.
All right. So who has the? Okay. So I don't know who has the second best walk up song. So say yours the best. Who's got the second best walk up song? And then who has the worst walk up song? You're like, bro, why did you choose that one?
I'm gonna have to go. Jackson Murphy has a pretty good one. It's a little throwback. I like that one. Luke Beal, too. He's got "Low Down" by Lil Baby. It went viral on TikTok. Everyone claps to it. It was like the basketball team. I forgot what basketball team it was, but in the March Madness, they're all clapping to it. So we all clap to that one. That one's pretty good. And the worst one, man, I don't want to knock anyone here. But
well, I mean, country songs. I hear a lot of country songs sometimes.
All we play in pregame. So
okay,
that's because Coach Donald he doesn't like when we play rap. So we're strictly country in the warm-ups. But Schneider, you know, he goes with his heavy metal, which is
okay.
Pretty
I'm fine with
to
that.
Me, but that's how he rocks. Yeah. So that gets him in his mode. So that's perfectly fine with me.
Okay, all right. I'm cool with that. All right. So you did mention too, Trevor, about you start off 2-3. You lost those three games up in NorCal towards the beginning of the year. Was that a reality check, so to speak? You know, was it a come to Jesus moment? You haven't lost since then, but you know what did you learn about? What did you guys learn about the team during that stretch?
Yeah, it was definitely a reality check. Like, we were 2-0 before that. We had just beaten Clovis High, so we were feeling really good. And we went up there. We knew those teams were going to be very good. And sadly, we lost all three, but we definitely could have came out of there with two wins at least. That's how we look at it. And I wish we could go up there back now with this team, how we're rolling now. But the only thing that pissed us off really was that we didn't get to represent the Valley and show that we can hang with those schools. Same with Buchanan, because we could easily hang with those schools. The Central Valley is very deep. But that was definitely a wake-up call for us. And I think that was a good thing that kind of could have happened to us, because now, like, losing was just obviously it's a horrible feeling, and that's not something we want to feel again. So,
talking with Trevor Wilson, Bullard Baseball. All right, would you rather? Would you rather game?
Let's go.
All right, would you rather make a diving catch to end a 1-0 game?
Okay.
Or would you rather hit a bases loaded double in the bottom of the inning to win a game?
I mean, I take a lot of pride in the outfield. So, I mean, a diving catch to seal the game would be pretty sweet. But I don't think there's any other better feeling than hitting a walk-off and having your teammates run out to you. So I might have to go walk-off there.
All right.
That's a good question.
Right. Good choice. Yeah, it is. Yeah. So that's tough. Like, maybe to win a championship game, making a diving catch, like a full-out dive where you think you're going to lose the game, that type of situation, yeah. Right? That would be tough to beat.
That is true. That would be
like, say, a diving catch, you know, to save the game. Maybe not to win a game, you know, but to save a game. Yeah,
I think that might be tough to beat. That might top it.
All right, so your dad, right? Your dad's a baseball guy, pitched at Fresno High City, drafted at Cal Poly. So there's a lot of baseball in your blood.
Do you remember,
what's your first memory of baseball? Like, your parents put a little plastic bat and ball in your crib. Do you remember anything like that, or playing catch with your dad for the first time?
Yeah. The farthest I could go back with my memory is definitely my first T-ball team. I played for I got put on a Dodgers team with a bunch of kids from my elementary school. And I think my first time facing live pitching, like, ever, I got hit by the pitch, and my dad said that if I quit then, that was it for baseball, and if I didn't, then I could have a long career. And I didn't quit, luckily. So stayed in there, and I'm glad that it's all working out now.
Absolutely. Was there a point where you started taking baseball more serious? Like, in the sense of, like, hey, I'm having a lot of fun. I'm pretty good. Like, all right, if I want to go next level, if I want to be really good, I want to improve my craft. Like, did something click? Did you make a goal list or anything like that when you were younger?
Definitely. When I was younger, I made a little – when I was, I think, 7th grade or 6th grade, I made a little goal list saying I wanted to be, like, a valedictorian, I wanted to get a D1 scholarship, and I wanted to get drafted. I think those are the only three goals that I put on there. So far I got valedictorian and I got my scholarship. So just really pushing to play pro ball, and that's just the goal from right now, from here on out. So, but, yeah.
So you identified that around seventh grade, where you've got two out of three.
Yeah. So a point where I really like know that I wanted to take baseball serious was probably going into eighth grade. I didn't get put on a team I wanted to get put on, and that kind of woke me up a little bit, and I realized that I really wanted to take this serious and prove a lot of people wrong. So my freshman year comes around, I got on a really good travel team, and I started getting some college attention. So that's when I knew that baseball was for me.
All right, so let's talk Irvine a little bit. What other offers did you have?
I had an offer from University of Washington, USC, off the tops kind of. I had a bunch of West Coast schools. It was mostly West Coast schools.
Fresno State?
I'm going blank. Fresno State actually did not offer me, which kind of hurt a little
bit.
That's a little bad blood now. Yeah. But it's all good there. Buddy Schneider's going there, so he's going to do great things. Murph Gray's there. It's my guy, too. He's doing absolutely phenomenal. So
why Irvine? Like, they came in hot? Were they like, hey, Trev, we see you doing this? Or say, hey, you come here, you're going to work hard. What sold you?
The head coach, Ben Orloff, he just from meeting him and hearing things about him, because originally I was committed to Oregon, and then I decommitted my sophomore year. And they were one of the first schools that jumped on me. They saw me play in, like, a Arizona Fall Classic. And, I did really good in that tournament. But their coach is, like, he's top-notch, dude. He's really young. He just absolutely loves baseball. He lives and breathes it. He had a lot of opportunities to go coach at a lot of Pac-12 schools and probably get paid more and stuff. But he turned that down to coach at Irvine, and ultimate respect for that guy, and I'm just can't wait to go play for him.
That's great. Well, you had a lot of options. You mentioned USC, chip on your shoulder. Fresno State didn't offer you. Say that with a little bit of a smirk. I love it. Talking with Trevor Wilson. Trevor, we only got a couple minutes here. You mentioned Ricky Henderson, one of your favorite all time, man. So who's your favorite baseball team, and who do you love to watch play ball?
Favorite baseball team's got to be the Giants. Just born into that, so I'm still a fan of them. They're a little sorry right now, but it's okay. They'll pick it up. But Ricky is definitely someone like I idolize. Like, I made sure in the MLB The Show, the game, that he was the first dude I got, and like, it's just everything he does. Like, he's got complete tools. He's swagged out. Everything he does, I try to copy his game as much as I can. It's kind of hard to steal like 90 bags every year, though. But
Who else? How about some current guys? Ricky. I mean, he's one of the all-time greats. Any current guys you like watching?
Of course, Trout. He's been my favorite since he came into the league. He's just electric. Acuna is another dude, and a dude people don't talk about a lot. Tim Anderson from the White Sox. I absolutely love watching him play. Dude could just flat out hit. And he could pick it with anyone. So
he's
like
a gamer.
He's
a gamer. Played in the World Baseball Classic. Moved to second base. So Trev, last question here. I know you transferred from Edison to Bullard, and I know you know all the guys from the Bullard team. You played ball with them. Went to Bear Junior High, which feeds into Bullard. But I mean, what does it mean when you put on that Bullard jersey every day and have the privilege to play baseball? What does it mean to you?
It means a lot. You know, there's been so many legends to come out of Bullard. And, growing up, I played Bullard travel ball my whole life. I played with pretty much all the dudes on my team right now from 8 years old all the way up to now. Played with them in middle school. So it means a lot. The connection we have is just unreal. I mean, I don't think there's teams that are hanging out every single night. The whole team's hanging out after a practice. The whole team's doing – we just do everything together. But putting the jersey on and having to, like, represent all the legends and playing in front of Coach Noakes, I mean, absolute legend himself. So getting advice from him and hearing him and having him in our corner, and Coach Donald, of course, just the best coach in the Valley, hands down. Playing for those guys, it brings a different type of level that you have to bring every day. And just there's athletes everywhere on the field, so no matter the situation, you're always competing, practice, anything. It's competitive all the time. So really looking forward to what we could do the rest of the year here on out.
Absolutely. Trevor Wilson, Bullard Baseball. This guy made a list of goals when he was in seventh grade to play, Division I baseball, to be valedictorian. He's hit those two, and to potentially play pro baseball. So, Trev, thanks for coming, and really appreciate getting
Thank
to
you.
Know you. Good luck the rest of the way. Awesome.
I appreciate it. Thank
yeah.
you.
All right. Coming up after the break, we'll be talking with Orosi High Athletic Director Ken Swaski on 1430 ESPN.
In a world where high school sports don't exist. Wait, no. We don't like that world. Different world, please. Ah, that's better. The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Welcome to hour number two of the Central Valley Sports Report. I'm your host, Paul Medders. You can follow me on Twitter, at Paul Medders, P-A-U-L-M-E-A-D-O-R-S. Just had a great conversation with Trevor Wilson, center fielder for Bullard High Baseball, number one team in the Central Section. If you missed any episodes in the past, you go to ESPN or 1430 ESPN Fresno website, go to podcast, go to Central Valley Sports Report, click on any past episodes there. Had a lot of great guests. And I got another one today, Ken Sawatsky. He's a Rosey High Athletic Director for over 30 years. He's retiring after 35 years in education from the district. Central Section Athletic Director of the Year in 2000. I saw that. That was really cool, Ken. So, Ken, first of all, thanks for driving up, man.
Well,
driving up to Fresno.
Thanks for having me, man. This is awesome.
This is awesome. So I've known Ken for a long time. He's got a few years on me. He did the Emmanuel route as well. Fresno Pacific, you graduated from Fresno Pacific as well?
Yes.
What year was that? I want to date you.
Oh, man. I don't know
if you are retiring, so yeah. I put that out there.
1979. Yeah,
Fresno
a long time ago.
So we were reminiscing a little bit, and Ken has, I don't know, called it an honor, but Ken gave me my one and only technical foul ever in the history of coaching and playing. So, yeah, you called me for an intentional foul on a guy that double pumped and flopped, and I had our 6'5" guy that was coming from the backside that challenged it as well. And yeah, I wasn't too happy with the decision that you made. And so I said, you said, Paul, quit arguing. I said, I can argue. I'm a captain. And then you teed me up right there. So that, and you don't remember that, of course, but of course I've held that. Maybe this is therapy for me.
Well,
it's finally coming out. Maybe we can finally make it.
You know, I just want to publicly apologize for being the one who did that to you. You know, but at the time, I think you deserved it probably.
Okay, there it is. All right, I deserve just for arguing, right? Just for arguing. I get it. All right, so I want to start too, Ken, with a Rosey. Just obviously, I know where Rosey is. I grew up in Dinuwa. They were our main rivals in U sports. But describe for everybody, let's say from Fresno, where is a Rosey? How do you get to a Rosey?
You get on the 99 and you go south and you go through Selma. You're going to get to the Mountain View exit. You're going to take that off. You're going to make a left turn and you're going to go down Mountain View, going straight east. That changes about 10 times before you get to a Rosey, because in Fresno County, it's Mountain View. As you get into Tulare County, it becomes Avenue 416. That'll take you all the way through Dinuba. In Dinuba, it becomes El Monte Way.
Yep.
And then once you get out of Dinuba, it goes back to 416. So we are about 18 miles due east from the freeway, 6 miles east of Dinuba.
And one high school town.
One high school
and
town.
And how many students do you guys
right
serve
now? We're about 1,000.
About 1,000?
Yeah.
Describe the demographics of a Rosey. What are the types of students that you get? I know, you know, I teach in Traver. I mention that all the time. Mostly migrant farm worker, parents at our school. So describe the demographics mostly of your
yeah
school.
Very similar to what you would say Traver is. I mean, about 93-94% Hispanic. We do have a pretty good Filipino population. About 5% of our campus is Filipino, and then you got a few others mixed in here or there. Migrant farm working, you know, in the last census, Cutler, which is a mile south of us, when we're the two communities together, Cutler Rosey Joint Unified, they were one of the probably in the top 10, unfortunately, one of the more poorest communities in the country. So, you know, a lot of people are struggling. All of our kids are on the reduced lunch, free and reduced lunch. So, but that doesn't prevent kids from achieving. We've got a lot of high achievers on our campus. I think we're maybe last year or year before, we had the most kids who qualified for a UC admission in Tulare County. So if you want to, you want to make something out of yourself coming out of a Rosey High School, there is no reason why you can't. Sometimes the town gets some bad press. You know, we have had some gang issues and things like that, but that's no different than any other community, you know. But it seems like sometimes these communities, people kind of focus on that more than anything. But it's been a great place to work. You know, I've enjoyed my 35 years in the district, and I feel like I'm a part of the community. It will always be home to me, and I think I will always be accepted, even when I come back now later. I think, you know, I'll probably be the athletic director for a long time.
I'm sure you're going to get a lot of phone calls in the next couple of years. What should I do in this situation, yeah. Mr. Sawatzky? So and you hit it, Ken, and you know, the heart of kids still stays the same no matter what school district you're at, and they all need guidance. But what, you know, for you, what has made Orosi, first of all, stick around there and just invest in the kids, but what makes it a special place?
I think that's just it's where I feel comfortable. It's where I've been given opportunities, not only to coach, but to thrive as a teacher. You know, I've fallen in love with the people there. I think that's the biggest thing. And I think, you know, they don't look at me as an outsider. You know, it's very easy when you go somewhere, you know, oh, that's the outsider, or they're an outsider, right? But, I mean, kids look at me as I'm just like, I'm one of them, and I feel like I'm one of them, you know, and I just look at people as people, right? I mean, I'm not looking at if you're poor, if you're rich, if you're, it doesn't matter to me, right? I mean, the kids, they love me and I love the kids, and I think that's probably the main reason why I've stayed.
Are there any specific stories that stand out to you right now? You know, has there been a student athlete or even a student that you've seen on campus that, you know, you've poured your heart into, or other teachers poured their heart into, you know, that it's just been a special story? You don't have to give any names, obviously, but, you know, just.
Yeah, well, no, it's easy to give names. I mean, you know, my first coaching job ever as a single coach was freshman basketball back in, I believe it was 1990. I had a kid named Mark Serta who was just, I mean, not the greatest player, but he hated to lose. And I coached him for a couple years, and then he went on to varsity. And then he ended up actually working in the district. He was started as a custodian, a night custodian, and he was our lead custodian for a lot of years at the high school. He's now at the junior high, and he's now my girls' basketball coach. And so he's the guy who took a girls' basketball program and turned it around, you know. So he's one of the guys that stands out. Grew up in the community, from the community, you know. His sister's from the community. His sister's one of the administrators in our district. So that's always cool to see kids who, you know, come back. Frankie Moncaro, a kid that I coached in my heyday. I mean, probably the greatest athlete I've had the privilege of coaching. I mean, you know, and he's just gone on to do great things, came back, worked in the district. You know, he made me who I was as a varsity coach. I give him a lot of credit. It's easy to coach, you know, a kid like that. But, you know, he came back, taught in the district for a while. He was actually, I hired him as my football coach for a couple of years, and then he had the opportunity to go and coach at COS and do some things there, and now he's doing some other things. But, you know, now he's an official. It's great when he comes back to officiate some of our games, either football or basketball, and it's always good to see him. We're seeing him at other places in tournaments and things like that. But, yeah, I mean, those are two examples. I mean, there's other athletes, you know, girls that played on our girls' basketball team when they really had their good run and who are coming back and giving back to the community. And, yeah, there's been a lot of kids.
Yeah, you're talking with Ken Sawatzky, the athletic director at Orosi High, and, you know, a lot of success stories with kids, and we love to definitely highlight those kids. School improvements, right? You've made a lot at the school. So talk about some of the great things that have been going on, or just been completed, or some of the school improvements as far as facility-wise at Orosi.
We have a superintendent, Yolanda Valdez, who she wants the best for our kids. You know, she grew up in the community. I mean, she comes from a migrant farm worker family. You know, her parents really emphasized education in her life. She is now our superintendent, which is fantastic. But she's been a big push to getting our kids to have great athletic facilities. And I believe it was 2018, we passed a $6.9 million bond in the community. First thing we did was put in a brand new science wing with 8 classrooms, got all this stuff where teachers can meet in the back and do all kinds of stuff. And then from there, we redid our stadium. It was about a $2 million project. basically tore the whole thing down. We were going to keep the old stands up, but then we found out because of DSA things and things like that, they couldn't find any paperwork on it, so we ended up just tearing it all down, putting up new stands, new all-weather track, new field, which is phenomenal. One of the cool things there is in working with my assistant, the assistant superintendent, we were talking about scoreboards and being able to put up track things and things like that. And he says, well, find out what we can do, you know, and then get back to me. And so I said, well, I talked to this guy at Fair Play, California. He says, if we're going to put up a video board, this is what we should do. We should get this camera stuff. And he looked at me and he says, he says, well, how much is that going to cost? I said, about $200,000 to do all that. And he goes, well, do you think we need that? And I said, yeah.
Heck yeah.
I said,
always
yeah.
Say yeah.
I said, yeah, we need that. He says, okay. So him and I both got up. We went across the hallway to the superintendent's office and said, this is what Ken thinks we need. Get it done. So that was great. But just the new football facility is great because we've had other districts come and look now at what we've done. You know, Fresno Unified's been out. I just talked to a guy at the Athletic Director Conference from NEF. They're putting up a video board in Corcoran. You know, they came out and they heard about what we did, kind of copying what we did. So that's been a big thing. Then we got that project done. Then across the street from the high school, in between the high school and the junior high, was about a 40-acre piece of property that was sold to the school district by a longtime community member. So now we have a sports park that was put up there. That's part of this bond. So we have a varsity softball, JV softball field, varsity baseball, JV baseball field. The two varsity fields have lights, which is really cool. We have, I think, four or five soccer fields. One of them is lighted. Youth football got their own facility. They've got stands and everything, holds about 500 people. And that thing is used nonstop. I mean, there's people playing out soccer. They bought basketball courts up there. They put in a splash park. So, like, this weekend when the weather turned warm, I mean, you will probably see people out there all day today from about noon to about 8 o'clock at night, kids playing in the water. And then we've been delayed a little bit on the latest project, but sometime in the fall they're going to break ground on an aquatics complex. So that's in the works. They're also going to put up a new performing arts building for our music department, which is going to be very beneficial for them. And then the last thing in the master plan is, which will probably be 5-6 years down the road, is to build a second gym. So
Wow, that's incredible. Talking with Ken Swoski, athletic director at Rosie High. Great things are happening at Rosie. So what I remember, Ken, and I remember, you know, playing on the baseball fields. I remember the gym vividly as well. So where would a second gym be? I can see it in my mind, but where might a second gym?
Right where the old varsity baseball field is.
Right there.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that field will get torn down. That's where the aquatics complex is going to be built, right up against the tennis courts. There'll be a parking lot there, and then just to the east of that parking lot will be the gym. It'll be close to we have a new locker room that they built, I don't know, maybe 10, 12 years ago. So it'll be right by that.
I want to ask too about COVID, the effects of COVID, right? You talk about all these great facility upgrades that you guys have made, but you need players. And, you know, it's been a challenge. It's been a challenge for a lot of the rural schools. And, you know, how has Rosie come out of that? What have you seen? What are some of the negative things that you're trying to still come out of the effects that COVID had on our student athletes?
I think the biggest thing is participation. You know, our numbers are way down pre-COVID. I track all the numbers. I've been doing it for about the last 15 years of kids that participate. Now, we have crossover numbers in here, right? So pre-COVID, like 2019, I think we had our best year was we had combined with all sports, and this is kids who maybe play multiple sports, whatever, 450 kids involved in sports
out of about 1,000 kids.
Yeah, at that time we had about 1150 was our enrollment.
Okay.
And now, you know, looking at this year and last year, we're down to a combined total number of about 325. So it's had a big effect on just kids wanting to participate. I see it more in our juniors and seniors, you know, than I do in our younger kids. We had great participation this year, like from our freshman kids in football. And so we're hoping that, you know, now your freshman kids have been in school for 2 years. There's a good group coming out of eighth grade that are coming over to the high school. They will have been in school now for a solid 2 years. But just you know, and we're not the only school dealing with it. You know, we're in the East Sequoia League Conference with schools like Lindsay, Woodlake, Orange Cove, schools, you know, like that. So very similar in size and things like that. And we're just schools are dealing with numbers. Girls more than guys. That's kind of been the theme in our league meetings and thing is like we'll ask each other, I mean, how's your participation? Man, our girl numbers are down. You know, I can't. Teams only being able to field varsity teams. I mean, we only could field a varsity girls soccer team this year in a community that's soccer crazy, right? I mean, we got AYSO teams. I mean, that sports park is booked like all year round with little kids playing soccer, you know. And so that's been one of the big struggles. Academics. Academics has been huge. I mean, just kids that have gotten behind, kids that aren't you know, towing the line, doing their work, things like that. So trying to get them caught up. Yeah, it's, you know, we're still feeling the effects. And I think it's still going to take us maybe a year or two to get past that. You know, we're still struggling with it.
Yeah, that's what I see talking with Ken Swaski, athletic director of Rosie High. That's what I see, Ken, is it's going to be two or three more years. So I know even Fresno Unified wiped out sports during COVID. My daughter in eighth grade lost her whole basketball season, and even in Traver, in our conference, we had no sports. And that was hard for me as our conference athletic director, too. It was hard, right? And it was hard to see the kids not be able to participate. I think it's going to have to be built up by the youth sports. How have you seen, Ken, you know, youth sports? You mentioned that, you know, you're seeing kids out there playing soccer and you get the new fields developed, which is awesome. But how important now, especially in communities like yours, are the development of youth sports and getting kids getting ready to play tackle football, right, and putting pads on? How important are those youth sports in development when they get high school?
They're key, you know, and one of the struggles we have, because we're an unincorporated community, right, so there is no community rec department or anything like that. So everything that we do, it's all done through the either through the school district or coaches are doing it on their own, right? And so that's kind of a struggle. But, yeah, the whole youth sports thing, you know, that you got to get them back engaged. You know, we're seeing that with our youth football that the district took over, you know, a few years ago. And, you know, just we're offering services for kids to play. AYSO has the tie-in now to the – you know, to the district and things like that. But, you know, not having a community like rec department, right? So we don't have like we have a baseball, like T-ball, like kind of like a minor kind of thing, but, you know, it doesn't go on from there, right? So there's really nothing for softball. You know, there is a basketball league that's being run in conjunction with our girls basketball program for the community. So, you know, both boys and girls play in that, which is good. We just hired a new basketball coach to replace me. And, you know, he's gung-ho. You know, he's been a part of, you know, in high school he played through Dinuba's program. So, you know, he's doing a lot to copy what Dinuba's has been doing. I mean, you know, Jeff Schofield's done a great job there taking that school. And, I mean, they've become a basketball power now. You know, I mean, consistently good. And so – yeah, that's the key. You know, I mean, kids playing travel ball, I've got mixed emotions on that.
that's for another segment.
Yeah. You know, but, yeah, I mean, just getting kids involved. We now offer through our PE department, we have elementary PE that we're offering now that is being taught. So we just did yesterday, we just had an elementary track meet with all of our fourth, fifth, sixth graders, which was very well attended with the three elementary schools. And so kids, you know, we're trying to get kids on our campus so they can see the facilities, run on the track. We had them come out and practice on the track, you know, so they could understand how you got to stay in your lane and things like that. But just, yeah, things like that, just to get them connected, you know, that you're going to be in a Rosie Cardinal one day, right? Yeah. This is where you want to be, you know, so.
Talking with Ken Swaski, athletic director of a Rosie. All right, got a couple minutes here, Ken. I know this probably could be another segment as well, competitive equity and divisions and all of those things. Where does a Rosie High fit, and where's your opinion on base divisions and everyone, you know, got to have a 30% now, you know, playoffs and all that?
You know, I think the base divisions, you know, we made a change January, because of what happened in football with, you know, like a Strathmore going to D2, a Dos Palos going to D2. And we said, you know what, we got to make a change here, you know. I think going to a base division, I think we're on the right track. I think the only thing that there still needs to be a little bit of tweaking, the moving down thing is kind of, I think that needs to be eliminated. I went to Salon to watch the basketball championships on Friday, and you could just see teams that moved down, like D1 to D2, and a team that moved up from D3. Even though they may match out size-wise and everything, you could see just in size, just you could see there was a difference, right, between a D1 school and a D3 school. I think that part of it has to be eliminated. The AD at Farmersville did some numbers. Him and I have been working on some things together, and there's a high percentage of teams that won championships were teams that were moved down.
Correct. Yeah.
So I think it's not as big a deal in D1 and D2 because they're so competitive in those two divisions and they play each other so much, right? But I think as you get lower down, D5, D6 teams kind of get shafted a little bit, especially D6 teams. You can have a really good D6 program, and then you get moved up to D5. And people don't realize when you move up a division, it's a difference. It's a different caliber of athleticism. We saw that with Farmersville's volleyball team that was fantastic this year, got moved up a division. They lost in the semis, unfortunately. If they would have stayed in D6, they probably would have won D6. It's that debate's all over the table right now.
It is. It could be another segment for sure. Last question here, Ken. What does the district of Orosi and the people of Orosi mean to you?
Well, I can't even put into words what it means to me. I feel like I've been on a farewell tour this year. I've been recognized at different schools I've gone to. We went to Woodlake for football. they gave him a shout out. I was at Lindsay for a basketball game. I was giving a shout out. It seems like everywhere I go, people are, you can't leave. You need to stay. It's been very emotional. And when I think of, there's always I'm always going to be a Cardinal, right? I didn't grow up a Cardinal. I became a Cardinal through my job, so I'm, it's a part of me that will never leave.
Well, Ken, I appreciate you coming in, first of all, but you're very well respected throughout not only the communities down there, but your name surfaces up here as well. And from the CIF office, I know everyone appreciates you and you've just done an amazing job and you have a heart for the kids and that goes a long way. So we see you and we appreciate you. And thanks for your time at Orosi.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for having me on. Awesome.
You bet, Ken. All right. That was Ken Sawatsky, athletic director of Orosi. We're going to turn to swim. Adam Reed, Clovis West swim and dive coach in charge of the state meet and all kinds of stuff. He'll be on the show to talk about their renovations and all the good stuff happening in the swimming world coming up after the break on 1430 ESPN.
Listen to Home Field Advantage Monday through Thursday at 3 p.m. The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Welcome back. Bottom of hour number two, the Central Valley Sports Report. I'm your host, Paul Metters. Had a great conversation with Ken Sawatsky. Oh, that's my type of guy, right? I'd run through a wall for that guy, retiring after 35 years in one district. Mentioned Orosi, they've had their challenges, socioeconomical coming out of COVID. But, the heart of a child, doesn't change. And when you pour into that, you definitely see results, and Ken's seen a lot. So really appreciate you driving up and having a great conversation. Turning now to swimming. Adam Reed, swim and dive coach. Do I add dive on that or just swim coach?
Swim and dive, yeah.
Swim and dive
We're
coach.
We're really proud of our divers.
All right, Clovis West, director of the state meet, which is happening in a couple weeks, May 11th through the 13th. Central Section Championships are next Saturday at Clovis West. The renovations, we're going to be getting into that. Then this is a lot of cool stuff are happening at Clovis West. So right now, Adam, thanks for coming on, first of all, man. I know this is super busy time for you. Is this the calm before the storm? What's going on?
Yeah, I'm glad I got the late slot. We had our morning practice, and we did ice baths, and then I jumped in too. So I was like, I got to get out of here and get over to First String Sports and meet up with Paul. But, yeah, it's been crazy. We hosted our huge invite a couple weeks ago, so that kind of started the gauntlet of just hosting the meets. And we just had track championships at West, and we're going to have our Central Section, and then it's on to state. So It is a lot of work. People thought I was crazy when I said I wanted to host the league because it was our turn in the rotation and track. And they're like, why don't you just skip because you have the – I'm like, no, I need new pool, new equipment. I want to test it as many times as I can so that it's seamless for state. So,
and we're definitely going to get into that in just a second. But the last name, Reed, right?
Yep.
Your brother, Duncan, played football, Fresno State, graduated in 05, I believe.
Yeah,
that's all right.
Yeah.
Played tight end. Talk about family genes and all that. And you said you had some athletic sisters, but you got into swimming and obviously your brother with football. But growing up athletically, what was the family dynamics?
I mean, I have my brother, Duncan, and then I have a younger sister and an older sister. And then we have a blended family. And there's actually some pretty athletic step siblings as well. So there's seven of us total. So growing up, we did all sports. Swimming was one of those sports that all of us could go to one practice, and so it was one drop-off, one pickup, and I think that had a big influence on my parents, but we were all pretty good at swimming, and all played soccer. A lot of us played baseball, and my sisters did volleyball. My brother did the football. He actually did swimming all the way up until his senior year, was a really good varsity swimmer, and then decided when he was going to come to Fresno State that he should run track and get a speed up, which was probably a good idea for Fresno State. But yeah, I mean, my younger sister, Megan, she's 6 foot tall and could throw a football in high school, probably 40 yards. And, you know, but she ended up being a college cheerleader
all right.
at UC San Diego. So yeah, we kind of all could have done different things. And, you know, my main sport actually wasn't swimming. I was more of a club soccer player, did swimming in swim season and a little bit in the summers, but mostly soccer, but then ended up getting into coaching because do you want to coach soccer out in the heat and down? I grew up in Glendora where it's the heat's kind of like Fresno and Clovis, or would you want to be at the pool all summer? And so I lifeguarded and coached and taught lessons and coached swimming, so kind of got into that way.
Well, there's been some renovations, and I've been to the complex, and you know, I've been to a couple state meets, and right, that was one of the deals, like, oh, it's hot out here, we need cover and protection for the fans, we want as many fans as possible. So what, you know, got the renovations, they're done. You mentioned you hosted the track championships,
yeah.
Right? So just walk us through, you know, what needed to be changed and, you know, what it looks like right now.
Yeah, I mean, it was basically the guts of the pool. So the pool's the original pool from when the school was built in late 70s. And basically all of the underground piping, the plumbing for the water on deck had all deteriorated, and we were having water leaks come up through the concrete. We probably patched, dug up concrete, replaced pipes, re-cemented deck several times. So it was just – it was getting to the time where we had to redo all – basically the whole underground. And so when we did that, you know, they basically kept the same exact outline that we've had and kept the towers and just redid it like it's brand new. And obviously added the huge, you know, stadium bleacher covers, which is super nice and really pops when you walk in, when you see that. And it is nice to have that in our summer. Where it actually, it's tough in the afternoon because you still kind of get that afternoon sun kind of coming in. When it sets on the west, you're facing it, so it still kind of gets a little bit. But when we have our morning finals, like for section, we'll start at 10:30, and same thing for state, it's going to be real nice.
So I want to ask you, too. Why is it called the Olympic Complex? It's the size of the pool. You know, explain to people out there the differences between maybe just a regular high school pool or a college pool, and then what will you call Olympic?
Yeah, so for high school, we race short course yards, which is when you see the big pool, it's a 50-meter pool, and that's the Olympic distance. So when you watch the Olympics on TV, they're actually going the whole length. So if our pool, it's like north to south. But for high school, we go the width of the pool, which is 25 yards. Our diving complex, which is why we get to call it the Olympic complex, is we have the 10-meter platforms. So you could run the full event of an Olympic events with swimming and diving. You could run 1-meter boards, 3-meter springboard, 5-meter platform, 7, 10. And so, like, the diving facility is really, you know, the next level. There's not many 10-meter platforms in California. So we have teams come in, you know, Bakersfield's coming in, Fresno State comes and uses our facilities. We have teams coming from the Bay Area that, you know, want to have access to practice on them because the collegiate teams don't even have those on it. So that on their facilities. So that's why it's the Olympic complexes. We have the 50-meter pool, plus we have the platform diving, and so that's where it's got a name.
When people see the complex for the first time, some outsiders, what are some of their reactions? What are some of the things that you hear that people say when they see it for the first time?
Wow, this is a high school? I mean, that's what the state meet we get. You know, there's 250 teams that come in from all over the state, and they just can't believe this is a public high school. And that goes, I mean, Clovis Unified goes first class with facilities. You know, they're really proud of what we have with facilities, and when they come in, they're gonna see world class facility. Like we've hosted national championships. We've had, you know, Janet Evans broke. You know, if you've watched swimming or grown up, you know, and you're an adult, you probably know
that name.
World records, and she was kind of a legend. Olympic swimming, and you know, she broke a world record in our pool. We've had several world records that were broken back in our pool, and there's, you know, a lot of Olympians that swim in our pool. So you're going to see a facility that is one of the best in the country.
Talking with Adam Reed, the swim and dive coach at Clovis West, hosting the state meet in a couple weeks. It's big time state meet and the Masters meet as well, but what are some other events that have been in the pool and some other events that might happen in the pool?
Yeah, so we held, kind of talking about diving, we held the Western Zones for diving. So that was all the top divers from Western United States came and did all the platforms in 3 meter and 1 meter. So we have hosted that. We're going to host, we always hold the Mike Snyder Memorial. It's Memorial Day weekend. So that has a pretty big meet, our first kind of kickoff long course season for the summer. Once we get to, you know, towards the end of summer, we, Clovis Unified and Clovis Swim Club host the Senior Western Zones, which is a huge meet. Basically, it's high school age kids down to, I mean, there's going to be younger kids there too if they have the times. But it's big enough that we host it at multiple sites. So, you know, when we were down, Clovis West was down, we held it at Clovis East and Clovis North. So we go multiple pools in the morning for prelims and then do a finals of everyone comes together for finals. So that's a big one. We've held in the past and you know, we'd love to get, you know, a junior nationals and or a sectionals, or, you know, I think bidding for, you know, it's hard now with USA Swimming and getting any type of pro meet. So in terms of weather, so that they prefer kind of the indoor pool, but you know, if it can time up, we can maybe get that. But we're always looking to put bids in with USA Swimming to host, you know, try and bring in those national team members and things like that. But basically the senior zones is one of the biggest in the summer, but in my mind, it doesn't get better than state championship. I mean, California is the top high school swimming state by far. You look at all Americans in terms of across the country, we triple the number of all Americans of any other state. Bringing all of those people together for the state, it's something that was needed. We started in 2015, and it just keeps building momentum, and it just doesn't get better than bringing the top high school kids all together. If you've been to the state track meet or you go to the wrestling, you know, the swimming is right there, if not more. We treat it like a national championship. They do the full walkout, and they got the little kids with the signs, and they walk the blue matting with music. It's pretty cool.
It is very cool. I've been there twice, and it's been amazing. You know, you mentioned the state track and field event, how Clovis Unified hosts it because it has incredible facilities, and now Clovis West has top-notch facilities. But I want to ask you this, Adam. How timing-wise, right? How, you know, hundredths of a second sometimes. What is the difference, you know, when you're coaching, of finding those hundredths of a second, you know, one-tenth of a second in being better? How are you able to do that as a coach?
I think it's a lot of details. Obviously, our season is really long, all of the spring sports. I mean, we're I think, 18 weeks, and some of the sports go longer, but 18 weeks is a really long time. We're also, most of our athletes that are at the top end are kind of going year-round, so they swim 12 months, or they play water polo, and they go water polo for 4 months, and then they do both water polo and swimming for a couple months, and then in the swimming, so in the pool all year round. It's just, you know, to go fast and get those touches at the end, it's kind of all about, you know, your season plan and tapering at the right point and peaking at that right point, and then just working on those little things. I mean, you can pick up hundreds of seconds on the start, your turns, learning how to get your fingertips to the wall first before that person next to you. Really, I mean, a tenth of a second, and that's a tenth, not a hundredth. You can't see it with your eyes. You know, there'll be times where you'll be like, that lane 4-1, but then on the board it's lane 5. And it's just you can't tell. So, you know, details.
Yeah.
Hundreds of seconds, you can't tell the difference.
I know. That's so wild when watching these events. And sometimes you don't know, right? You're looking at the board to see how the board comes up. We need to mention, too, Adam, who are some of the top swimmers that are out there right now that people will be able to watch when they go see these events in the next couple of weeks? So who are some of the top swimmers around in the Central Valley?
Yeah, I mean, we've got some really strong swimmers right now in the Central Valley, and it's not just, you know, the juniors and seniors. We've got great freshmen, too. You know, our local kind of Fresno Clovis, Olivia Sundgren, you know, over at Buchanan. She's a state placer returning. She's going to swim at Cal Poly next year. I got to mention my own team. I've got Julianne Snyder, who's a stud. She's going to go play polo at Berkeley. And Avery Easterling, you know, defending CIF champ in the 200 free. Hannah Marinovich, who's one of my juniors, who's already verbal to Tennessee, big top 10 program in the country. The Hill sisters, Abby and Audrey. Audrey's a freshman. She won a couple events yesterday. She's going to come in as a top seed. Think about Clovis North just is loaded with girls. Bianca Fernandez is going to go to UC San Diego. Hayden Lambert on the guy's side. He's going to go swim at UNLV. They got a really good group of young guys, as do Clovis West. We got some young guys, a lot of freshmen and sophomores that you're going to hear for a long time. Too many to name. And then, you know, we got a ton of great kids in Bakersfield. I mean, the girls for Liberty's girls, he's got a couple freshmen. Gigi Munoz Rodriguez is coming up. You're going to hear that name. She's 55 and 100 fly. She's probably going to come in top seed. And then we've got the kids on the coast. We got a couple fast boys from San Luis Obispo, and then Arroyo Grande's always good.
Is it true, Adam, that you mentioned Bakersfield? That was good to hear that Bakersfield has some swimmers. But the pool situation, Bakersfield, is different, right? They don't have. Is it true they don't have pools on their campuses?
Well, they're getting pools.
Got it.
So
okay,
they just got a brand new pool, but they're sharing it. So they do share a lot of pools, but it's getting better for them. So that they used to just have basically, you know, Garces has a pool, and they, you know, to host the big meets, it's like Bakersfield JC, or you got to go to Cal State, and they've had, you know, some shakeups in their club coaches and programs and mixing around, but they're getting some bonds passed down there and opening up some new pools. So I was just talking to Mark down at Liberty, and they hosted 5 leagues and 1 league championships all together. So it was almost like a Southern Central section pre-meet. So, but yeah, it's getting better. I mean, the pools, we're getting more pools around here, you know. Hoover got a new pool, you know, there's some other people that are putting in some 50-meter pools.
Talking with Adam Reed, swim and dive coach at Clovis West. So as a meet director, you've probably seen anything and everything under the sun. You've been doing this for a long time. What's like a fun story or something that you never imagined you'd have to take care of as a meet director, or something that might surprise people that you do?
People don't really understand. When you're the meet director, Brian Weaver will understand this for the track. He's over at Buchanan. He's the meet director for track and field, right, for the state meet. There's so much that goes into it, and you have a team. You're building your team. But, I mean, like the little things, like you're losing timing connection, and no one knows that, but you and your computer operator is like, oh, no, like this has got to get fixed right now. Could be porta potties coming in, like the truck coming in, and we had a couple years ago, we had the section diving championships, and we had the porta potty truck came in and was like trying to clean them and pump them out, and the divers all of a sudden you just getting that smell, and you gotta like run out there and like stop them and say come back in 4 hours. You know, it's the little things about phone calls and emails, and there's a lot of coaches. We have a lot of great coaches, but we have a lot of coaches that are first-time coaches. And there's a lot of technical detail into, like, the entry process. And you just get a lot of questions that you think people would know, and they don't. And you just assume that this is an easy thing if you've been coaching a couple years. Yeah. And so the questions of the call are all – and I love them, please keep giving me coaches. let me help you out if you got any questions so that, you know, we're doing it correct and not having to go back and fix things. But it's a lot.
And I'm sure, too, Adam, there's been some moments where you've been like, you know, someone's come up to you with a question or a problem, like, really, bro, that's pretty tiny. You could probably find somebody else that could fix that problem. I'm sure you've been through some of those. I want to ask you, too, Adam, you know, swimming. I have a big appreciation for swimming and water polo since covering high school sports. I see what you guys do as coaches. I see what the kids go through in preparation and those early morning workouts and, you know, what you put your body through and taking care of your body. What can you just walk us through really quick what a really tough practice might look like? Right? One of those practices where, like, I hate swimming or I hate you, coach, where they come out of the water, they're really, really mad at you.
There's a couple. So depending on if you're a distance swimmer or a sprinter, there's two sets of hard. Like, you could come in and go, we're going to go, you know, 8 dive 50s on 5 minutes, and you're not going to get any loosened end in between, and we're just going to go straight lactate, and it's just like you feel like cement. If you do it right, people are puking in trash cans because it's just your body is just builds up just crazy lactate. But some kids might like that type of set, the really hard ones. And I haven't done it for a really long time because I haven't had kind of like those like crazy, like I want to challenge, throw something at me where like it's spring break and the spring break lines up kind of like where we're peak yardage. I'll go 100-100s on 120, 2 hours straight, 100-100s. 100 yards.
Who's counting those down?
They do a pretty good job because it's pretty, you know, they do like the lane lines, you have buoys and you can slide the buoys to help count. They'll count by tens. Like I had Justin Wright, who was an alumni, and he went and swam at Arizona, and he had, when he was there, he was the national champion. He was the national champion for USA Swimming, but in high school, he was like, I'm going to do half of these fly. He went every other fly. And people don't understand, like, I don't know, but like, it's really hard to train fly.
Yeah.
And I didn't tell him to, he just did it.
Yeah.
And it was crazy. and people would think that's really hard. But my typical, like, every week and a half, I go a really hard test set, and we go 2100s, and it's a failure set. So any kind of failure set, you're putting your body to failure, and kids typically don't like those. They're like, they want to know when it's coming.
Yeah.
Because they want to be ready. But we do that every week and a half where we go 2100s in it. And it's to an interval. You keep dropping intervals. So that if they start on a minute 20, the next time they try a minute 15, if they fail at 15, maybe they made a certain amount, they're going to do it again. And then they see success and they'll make them. And then we go a faster interval on the next one. So it's the failure of like putting your body to the point of failure on purpose. Is really hard.
That's wild. That's crazy. Adam, we only got a couple minutes here, but I do want to ask you about, you know, when, so you know, when you get to that point of pushing kids, but when do you, you know, you got an elite swimmer and you can identify them maybe at 10, 11, 12 years old. When are you able to decide, obviously working with the parents, knowing the kid, like when to push the kid, when like, hey, this one has Olympic potential. Like how are you able to balance all that?
It's tricky. I mean, the philosophy of USA Swimming is that you and you want to have them grind it out
at a young age,
like especially if you're a female. USA Swimming is like 12 years old. We want to put them in, you know, 6,000 to 8,000 yards, and that's a lot. You know, my high school kids are rarely go over six at this point, 6,000 yards, but they want to grind and find those elite gold medalists. You know, as a coach though, you want. I was balanced. You know, I was a swimmer, but I did soccer and I played baseball a little bit. And I think it's really important to do multi-sports. I think it's good to be balanced. I think if a kid were to really want to do it, that would be their choice. I don't think it's good to quite push them in, but I think it's also important to talk to parents and have those conversations with coaches and parents and be like, hey, your kid's got a lot of talent. Like, let's take another step. And we have a lot of kids that are really good at 12 and they do year-round club swimming, but they also play soccer. They also do band. They also are doing dance. So doing both, two sports. And so, you know, it's a fine line. Every kid is different. You know, every kid is different. There's some kids that are like, I have to go to every single practice. Whereas when you're, you know, 12 years old, you don't need to go to, you know, the top club kids are going 9 practices a week. You know, they're doubling 3 times a week and Monday through Saturday. But they don't need to do that. You know, I think there's a progression where, you know, when you're 8, 9 years old, you can go to 3 practices a week or 2 practices a week. And then if you get to 10, maybe you add a practice. And then you start to see success. And there's levels of meets. You start to get a faster and faster meets. You start to put a little more time, and then they can find it. I think you see kids in swimming that are okay at 12, and they go full in, and they love the sport. And by the time they're 18, they're absolute stud swimmers. I mean, going to colleges, you know, on scholarship. So it's one of those sports, like, you put the time in, it will reward. You'll get rewarded. I tell it all the time to kids. It's like you put the time in, you're going to get rewarded.
And you've coached some incredible athletes over the years. Adam, always fun talking to you, catching up. I see you have football games, basketball games. I see you everywhere, and you're always up for a good conversation. So thanks for coming in. Valley Central Section championships next week and then following state meet, right?
Yeah. Yeah, Wednesday is diving, and then we'll have a state qualifier for the top divers on Thursday. And then we'll have prelims on Friday, finals on Saturday. Then state will just be Thursday diving, and then swimming prelims on Friday, and then Saturday state finals.
Got it. Awesome. Make sure you guys check it out. It's always a fun event. Adam, thanks for coming on. We'll take a final break here, wrap everything up on 1430 ESPN.
Thanks for having me.